Extraordinary women doing extraordinary things. It's Women Who Rock with Erin V.
It is the Women Who Rock podcast on WCSX, and I'm very excited to welcome in to the podcast Katie Donovan, who was named Executive Vice President of Families Against Narcotics, and she also has a new program in the Metro Detroit area called Hope Not Handcuffs. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. This is fantastic.
Now, I was telling you before we started talking on the podcast that I read a little bit about your story, and just to give the listeners kind of your background, I know you had a daughter that was an addict, and so why don't you talk a little bit about what you did before you joined Families Against Narcotics and what even got you involved in the community?
Sure. So my daughter struggled for many, many years with substance abuse, and her journey began about 10 years ago, and at the time it started with prescription narcotics. And I saw it as a parent. I was doing all the right things. I was the brownie leader, the PTA mom. We went on the typical family trips to Florida, and I taught my kids about drugs, but I honestly think it was more of a general term. And I taught them about the dangers of drinking and driving. I had absolutely no idea to educate my children on prescription narcotics and the dangers. I think the education wasn't out back then. Certainly is much more prevalent now, thank goodness. But I didn't know the signs. And so we just went through many, many years of her struggling. And at the time, I had a very high-profile corporate career in traditional marketing. I was worked for a Bluetooth semiconductor, and most of my travel was international. And, God forbid you tell anyone, right, especially being a woman in a man's world, I didn't want anyone to think that I was weak or had personal family issues that could affect my judgment. So you keep quiet. You don't tell anyone of what your family is going through, and you just don't know where to turn or what to do. And I remember getting to a point with my daughter where I just felt in a black hole. I didn't want to get out of bed. I had lost my drive and will to do anything, really. I gained weight, and I didn't feel that I needed support. I felt I can handle this. This is my child. Plus, I'm type A, right? So I wanted to do it for myself. But I remember my husband calling me one day and asking me to do something. It could have been, I don't even remember. It was so simple, just like taking the garbage out. And I had a meltdown. And I said, I can't do this anymore. And I didn't mean life. And then I felt pulled in so many different directions. And I was paralyzed with fear of everything. And I jumped in my car and I drove. And I just drove and drove and drove. And tears coming down my face because at this point, my daughter had been living in a drug house in Detroit doing heroin and cocaine and Xanax. And I couldn't imagine and understand why this was happening to good people. What was going on? And I just wanted to take her pain away of her struggle. And that was my point of I realized, if I don't do something for myself and get my own support, I'm no good for anyone. And so I started attending Families Against Narcotics support group meetings, and I loved them so much because it empowered the whole community to come together. It wasn't segregated like some other groups. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just got more support in this type of environment. So it was families that have loved ones struggling, those that are in recovery, people that have lost loved ones, therapists come, drug court, you name it, anyone who's interested in educating themselves was welcome because this is a community issue and we have to come together in unity to find a solution or at least offer support to one another. And I just absolutely fell in love with this group. And then my husband encouraged me to start writing about our journey because it just seemed so crazy, all of these things that were happening, and I could tell you a gazillion stories, but I won't go into it.
Well, and that's what was going to be my next question for you. I stumbled across your blog. I read My Daughter, the Addict, A Suburban Mom's Nightmare, which is proof that this can happen to anyone. And one of the things I read is you had an article called No One Brings You Casseroles When Your Child Is an Addict. And I was reading through your posts, and I'm like, good grief. You know, as a mom, it's like your worst nightmare having your children in that situation, and you can't find a solution.
Right, right. This is the whisper disease. This is the taboo topic. And I truly feel silence is the number one killer, because if we don't talk about this and share our stories and not be ashamed of what's going on, and the same with that person struggling, they are ashamed of what they're doing. No one is happy using. No one grows up to say, I am going to be a heroin addict. That just doesn't happen. And we have to come together and realize this isn't a moral feeling. This isn't a choice. This is a disease that they're struggling with, and they need support just like anybody else. So that's really why I started talking about this and coming open, and never in my wildest dreams did I expect my blog to turn into what it turned into. I was praying that 20 of my family and friends would read it, or petrified that they would read it too, if that makes sense, because now everybody would know what's going on.
But don't you think that's part of the solution to the problem, is that if more families are dealing openly with this issue and we all realize that it's not a black thing or a white thing or a Hispanic thing, that it is a global disease, that it's going to help people deal with the addicts and their families?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't want any family to feel alone when they're going through this. I was paralyzed feeling alone, and that's why I want to reach my hand out to others, that if they are struggling or have a loved one struggling, call me, text me, email me. I don't care. I will talk with you because I get it 100%, and you will be, you know, I will talk with you with compassion and understanding and no judgment, because we, you know, the world is full of judgment, and I think even with social media, it's easy to become judgmental. And it's, you know, I'll be honest, when I would think of someone that struggled with heroin, I saw someone in the movies. I didn't have any experience with this. Or I saw someone that was on the corner of 94 and Ross, right, with the signs. That's what
right.
I viewed. I never pictured my daughter, ever. And I'm ashamed of that. I'm very ashamed of that, because I didn't think I was a judgmental person. But this, unfortunately, her journey, yes, it has brought us so much pain, but it has honestly made me a better person.
Well, you've been named Executive Vice President of Families Against Narcotics, and I know you do a lot of community stuff. You have your blog, which is absolutely incredible. I will put a link on the Women Who Rock page so that people can follow along and get resources to help them. But one of the things that I found was interesting is I read an article about a program you're involved in called Hope Not Handcuffs. And it talked about the number of people that you guys have helped. So can you explain what that program is and how it works?
Absolutely. Hope Not Handcuffs is an initiative of Families Against Narcotics. And the premise of the program is someone that is struggling with addiction can walk into one of our participating police departments and ask for help. That officer on duty will call our angel coordinator, and a volunteer will be dispatched. We call them angels. And that angel will arrive and facilitate getting that person into treatment as soon as possible. We've had great success with the program. We started a year ago, February, and as of yesterday, we've helped just over 950 people into treatment. It's been, it gives me chills. We had no idea if anyone would even have the courage to walk in and to utilize this program. And we've just been blown away by the love that we've been shown in the community coming together for this.
Well, it's incredible because I know with a lot of addicts, the last place they want to go is to a police station because most of the time, if you're an addict, you've already worn out your welcome with your family. You've probably done some things you're not proud of, and you really don't want to deal with law enforcement. But the fact that law enforcement is realizing, listen, you know, jail is not the place for people who have this disease, I think is incredible in itself.
Oh, it's a totally different mindset for them. And I will tell you, you know, there were definitely some officers who were not advocates of our program. And now that they have seen the transformation of people that have been in the program itself and also their own officers in the police departments changing their views, now those that were kind of not supporters are our biggest advocates of the program. It's just been incredible.
Now, I have to ask about your daughter. She's clean and sober now?
As of today, yes. I always just try and say today is a good day. She's been had a wonderful, wonderful journey. She did experience a relapse several months ago, unfortunately. She lost someone very, very close with her, and she found them passed away. So it was very traumatic for her, but she is back in action, working very, very hard in her recovery, and just enrolled in college to go for her nursing degree. So today's a good day. I'm just so very proud of her.
What do you have to say to parents who are dealing with the same thing where they're having children who have relapses? Because we all know how serious heroin is as a drug, and I like to say it's one of those monkeys that you never really get off of your back. I had a good friend who is still a recovering heroin addict. It's one of those things that he's been struggling with for the last 15 years. What's your message to parents who are dealing with this?
Never give up hope. As long as they are alive and breathing, there is always hope. And reach out for support. Sometimes we get so obsessed with saving our children that we forget about ourselves. And honestly, when I became stronger and focused on my own healing, ironically, that's when my daughter started becoming stronger.
Because you had the tools and the resources to help her.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Now, if somebody wants to follow your blog and get more information about Families Against Narcotics, how do they get in touch with you, Katie?
They can email me at Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at amothersaddictionjourney.com.
And that's your website as well, amothersaddictionjourney.com?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Do you have any events coming up, maybe for somebody who, you know, is dealing with this right now and doesn't know how to get help or where to turn? Is there, you know, other than the website, is there an event coming up or a place they can go to get information and resources?
Yes. If they go to familiesagainstnarcotics.org, we have several events listed. Our biggest one coming up is in July. It's a run. But we have approximately in the Metro Detroit area about 38 support groups a month. So if they go on there, look at locations, they can usually find something very, very close to their proximity at any time. And we also have a helpline. If they're in urgent need and need to speak with someone, we will help them at any time.
So Families Against Narcotics, Katie Donovan, my special guest today on the Women Who Rock podcast. You know, what you're doing is incredible, and I commend you, and that's why I wanted to feature you on Women Who Rock, because you are a rock star, Katie. Everything that you've done based off of your life experience and the fact that you're giving hope to so many people who feel like they have nowhere to go. God bless you.
Oh, I am honored. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
It is part two of the Women Who Rock podcast on WCSX. As always, Cindy Shelter Salcido from Turning Point Macomb. They help victims and survivors get their lives back in order. And I always say victims because, well, we always say survivors too, Cindy, but the truth is that they're a little of both, as we're finding out, you know, especially with this whole Dr. Larry Nassar situation. These were all people who are now survivors, but they were victims of a very horrible person.
You're right. And we do use that word interchangeably here. And I try to follow the lead of a survivor and how they feel. Sometimes they say, no, I'm not a survivor. I feel like I'm a victim. And so that's the lead that I follow. But we do use the word and term interchangeably.
Now, I need to remind everyone, too, if they know someone that's in need of assistance, it is turningpointmacomb.org. And there is a 24-hour crisis hotline number that you can use as well if you are you or somebody you know who's in need of help. And what is that number again, Cindy?
It is 586-463-6990.
Fantastic. Now, we've talked previously about the Larry Nassar case out of Michigan State University and, of course, the Team USA Olympic team. This man abused hundreds of young women over the years. And now we've had our very first male survivor come forward in the case. This was really surprising to me because we, you know, so far up until this point, and I'm sure there's going to be more people that come forward, have only seen women. Why do you think it took so long for this one man to come forward?
Generally, when somebody or another survivor, or like we've seen publicly lately, there's been this domino effect of others who have come forth and said that they've been victimized. It allows for survivors to start to feel safe to come forward with their story. And certainly, we have to do our part and listen forth. We don't want to silence them.
Now, this gymnast is the first man to accuse Larry Nassar of abuse. Do you think now that he has come forward that we're going to see more men come forward and say that they are also survivors of this horrible person?
It's very possible. It is very possible.
Now, at Turning Point, you deal with a lot of survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. How often do you deal with situations involving men?
It's unfortunately not as often, and there's a lot of reasons for that, because we certainly have in society a lot of harmful stereotypes about masculinity and myths about sexual violence that make it difficult. And as a society, we have a lot of denial that men, in fact, can be victims of sexual assault. So for society to acknowledge that men are raped, we have to acknowledge that men can be vulnerable. So both men and women are socialized to see men as very powerful and in control of their bodies. And so boys learn early on that men must be strong and not vulnerable. And combined with a culture that views sexual violence as the norm and blames victims for their own assault, this makes it really difficult for men to come forward and seek services.
So how would you encourage somebody who, and because you've been doing this for so long, Cindy, I'm sure you know the signs of somebody who has been involved in an abuse situation. How would you even encourage them to come forward or to seek help or even get that dialogue going?
Well, it's really important that we raise a lot of awareness around that. And certainly, you know, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so a lot of times we try to get information out there about sexual violence and that it's not just a woman's issue, that men are also victims of this type of crime. And men and boys who have been victimized have the same rights to supportive services, including anyone who supports him.
Like, you know, with the Hollywood scandal, we briefly touched on that, too. For sure, when Terry Crews came forward during the Me Too movement, and he's quite the popular actor, I thought that it would give more of a voice to men who have been involved in abuse situations. But we only saw a handful come forward. Does that stem back to what you were saying about, you know, men are supposed to be manly men and not be vulnerable? Even if there is like somebody like Terry Crews who's in their corner saying, hey, you know, this is not okay.
Exactly. And we heard Terry say, I know I watched him when he was being interviewed on one of the morning programs, and he said, I felt emasculated. I felt objectified. I was horrified. And so there's a lot of feelings that come along with being victims of a sexual assault. And certainly the reactions are very similar to females. In fact, you know, that they may experience some of the very same effects like anxiety and depression and post-traumatic stress and that sense of shame or blame. But Aaron, that's just a short list. You know, they may face other challenges that have been unique to their own experience in which they feel disturbed that they were unable to protect themselves because of that stereotype that we assign men. And they start to feel like maybe they were less of a man because they didn't have that control over their body. So I want to always make sure that I mention and get out there and make this awareness to men that for any man who has been harmed by any abusive sexual experience, that they are not alone. In fact, it's 1 in 6 men are survivors of sexual violence. They're absolutely not to blame for what had happened to them, because we know that blame is really at the core of this. And I know that male survivors often feel responsible because they should have been stronger and they should have been able to stop it. But it is not about physical strength. It is about power. It's about control. And so it's okay to ask for that help. It's okay to express that pain. And for anyone who comes forth that feels this should get that kind of support so that they can have their voice and not feel silenced.
Now, you mentioned that women and men tend to have the same feelings after they've been abused or in an abusive situation. But obviously, you have to handle the cases differently, you know, and when they're involving men versus involving women.
Well, they're handled in the way that the survivor comes forth with it. Every situation is unique to their own experience. So we handle it as it comes. And we want to make sure that we know that survivors have the respect of confidentiality. They have the right to feel believed and validated. They have the right to have the injustice of what happened to them acknowledged and to respect their autonomy in the situation, because we know that they're experts in their own life and what they need. So we just listen to their voice, and we don't separate the genders. We respect them individually and what they know that they need for themselves.
Now, you mentioned that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and that's right around the corner from now. I mean, the time is just zipping by so fast. I know that Turning Point has a lot of things planned for the month of April. Can you tell me a little bit about what's coming up?
Absolutely. And I will see to it that you have all of the events that we're preparing for the month. But one of the ones that I really want to get out there today is the fact that we are starting this campaign, which is scheduled to launch April 20th at our big event, our Stepping Out with the Stars event at the Carls. It's a campaign that is used across the state by men to raise awareness about the problem of domestic and sexual violence and the need to support organizations that are working to end that violence and support victims through that. And so this challenge spotlights men who are allies to challenge their peers or other men in their lives to become involved by donating or raising $100 for Turning Point and taking a pledge to stand up against violence against women and men. And certainly all of this information is going to be on our website because we all have a role in preventing sexual violence. It is preventable. So it's important to recognize the role that we play as bystanders in preventing this crime.
Fantastic. The website is turningpointmacomb.org. My guest, as always, is Cindy Shalter-Salcido. Once again, what's the 24-hour crisis line, Cindy?
It is 586-463-6990.
6990. 586-463-6990. If you are in need of emergency help or know someone who is, that's the hotline to get a hold of. And as I mentioned, turningpointmacomb.org is the website where you can get information. And Cindy, you know, throughout the next coming weeks, we'll highlight some of the things you have planned for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, because it is a whole month. And I know you guys, as you mentioned, the Stepping Out event and the challenge for men, but I know there's going to be a lot more. And I want to make sure that everybody is aware of what's happening so that, you know, we can get the message out there.
Great. I really appreciate that.
All right, this has been the Women Who Rock podcast. We'll be back next week with another episode. We will be talking with a woman who is sending all of her love to Detroit.